Today's episode of Talking Games is brought to you by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Thanks, Cards Against Humanity. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Tim.
My name...
This is the last episode.
So good.
This is the last episode.
So good. It's so good. That's exactly what I wanted to happen. That's why I said, Tim, you should start us off. Oh, boy.
You know what, though? Shame on me for not, probably during the fourth episode, going, Clayton, that's not to you. That's to the listener. You know?
Oh, man, really?
Hi, everyone. You're listening to a podcast called Talking Games, and this is the last episode of it.
Mm-hmm. Hey!
Did we not tell you this?
I forgot! No, that's too bad.
Not a surprise.
Let's save thank yous and whatnot for the
end.
How about that?
Be the end.
So what has this been? It's been a podcast with some friends talking about video games like we were kids. Again, it's been really fun. We've talked to our friends in the comedy community, some developers, all sorts of good people. And
Tim, who are you?
Tim Dunn.
You should let people know who you are.
My name is Timothy Robert Dunn. I'm a longtime gamer. Let me give you the background.
There we go.
Oh, no.
This is the last time we get to do this.
I started playing video games back when you could go to stores and rent a video game system for the weekend. Do you guys remember that?
I do remember that.
Yes. So like,
I did that with a Sega Genesis at a Blockbuster for my birthday once.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. Played a lot of Earthworm Jim.
Yeah.
Sure. I was a big fan of it. Even prior to that, this girl that babysat me, we were family friends, and we went over to her house, and we played Super Mario and Duck Hunt.
Nice.
And that was like, oh, that was it, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sweet taste.
That's how it gets started.
Yeah.
And then I played, I had a Super Nintendo, and then I worked my way up the PlayStation ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Took a little break in college, couldn't afford it. And then, as an adult with a real job, I got, real systems again.
Oh, and you got a real system, you'd be playing on PC. Let's be honest.
Ooh. You shut your mouth.
I'm just saying.
Shots fired.
Hey, who are you, sir?
Hey, my name is Kellen Tarrant. I started playing video games as a young boy in a Colorado blizzard. My dad knew that the snow was going to keep us in the house. We went out and bought a Nintendo Entertainment System, and we played all of Mario for a 5-day stint. Never left the house. And I've been hooked ever since.
Who are you? Good.
Yeah, who are you? Who are you?
This is Clayton Margeson, the best of the three.
Oh, now,
but I do have a great origin story with my video gaming, which is I would go over to the brothers' house. The brothers were three boys who lived next to me.
They were all about
the same age.
Yeah, their family's last name was brothers. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And so it was perfect that they had these three kids all about my age who are all boys, and they were extremely difficult to get along with, each one in their own way, but they always had a great gaming system, mm-hmm. and I remember the first time I ever saw Super NES being played was at their house when they were playing Final Fantasy II. Or Final Fantasy IV, as we know it now.
Okay.
And I saw the part where you kill a guy and throw him off a bridge.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the coolest thing I have ever seen, and I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then I did.
Yeah.
I begged my parents to buy me a Super NES, and they were like, I don't know, this seems like it'll lead to you doing this all the time. And I was like, no way. And then today I... worked from home and played Zelda Breath of the Wild all day. So there you go.
Nice.
Obviously, things have worked out. But yeah, I love doing this podcast with these guys, mm-hmm. but I mostly have enjoyed it because I know that we're going to get to talk about my favorite thing in the world, which is Japanese RPGs.
Yeah.
But first, I feel like we should start this episode off, just like every other episode.
Yeah.
What have we been playing, Kellen?
Guys, I told you this in a text message, and I'm happy to report... I've purchased a Nintendo Switch.
Ooh!
I played it all weekend. Clayton's response to me playing and purchasing a Nintendo Switch, the burn was very real. It felt very real. Until I opened it up and held it in my hands, I was like, "Oh, this is exactly what I need right now." The fact that I could sit there and play it, and then hand the controller to Dennis, and we were playing Mario Kart, and the Mario Kart allows you to have auto acceleration, and it when you're turning, it makes sure that you're not turning too hard. So as a 3-year-old, he's like placing second and third in a match because he doesn't have to do much.
It's like bumpers when you're bowling.
It's exactly okay. like Got bumpers. Wow, really? It's great. It was great to play that. It was great to play that with Annette, who really doesn't like video games, because she was like, hey, if he can play it, then I want to play it too. That's really fun.
If your 3-year-old son can play
it? Yes. Yes. If he can do this, then I guess I can do it, was her answer. And then playing Breath of the Wild, I told Clayton when I got here today, I was like, oh, this is absolutely a game that is on the best games that we played. It belongs in the top three. It is an incredible game.
Yeah.
I can't wait to keep going home and playing it. And the fact that I can take the console and I'm sitting on the couch and I'm like, all right, well, I don't want to sit on the couch anymore. I want to go lay in bed and play this and take it completely with me and go and still have that experience is surprisingly enjoyable.
That's great.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I really love Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Let me jump in here to just quickly say I think I'm getting close to the end game content, and I like can't wait. I'm so excited not mm-hmm. to beat it, because I am a little sad it'll
yeah.
be done.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited to see what they have in store, because everything has been really quite good.
This is like when you can go fight Ganon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've now gotten to the point where I could just go fight Ganon if I want to. Okay. I've got a little bit more exploring to do.
Yeah.
I feel kind of like, I want to check this out. But it's surprising how much, like, I don't feel the need to, like, get every heart container.
Yeah, absolutely get that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was reading today about some speedrunners, and there's a new world record of 36 hours to beat Breath of the Wild, and I was like,
wow,
that's a speed record to beat the game, 36 hours.
Yeah.
Most games in completion are around 40 hours.
Yeah.
So that's wild to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I need to look up how many hours I put into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I put like 7 into that. Yeah. So,
Clayton, have you been playing anything else besides Breath of the Wild?
I've been playing a little bit of Overwatch, but I keep logging on at a time when none of my friends are playing,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. solo queuing is a miserable nightmare.
It is. It's the same way for me these days. I'm like, boy, if I don't see anyone playing, I'm like, all right, well, I don't need to play right now.
And I've started maining Mercy,
which has
been really fun.
Yeah.
I actually really like it,
yeah,
which I normally, stuff like that, I'm like, this is too much, because I get too, stressed out by her,
absolutely.
Running off and getting killed, but I've gotten much better at sort of cutting my losses and realizing, like, well, that guy's just gonna die. Mm. I can't help him, but maybe I can res him if I heal this person.
Maybe. Yeah. Tim, what have you been playing these days?
I have been playing a little game you guys recommended called Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
And you also texted about that, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, no, I was going to say, give me that cord so I can plug your thing
in. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. You're very
welcome.
I thought you just wanted a high five.
I do want a high five. I appreciate that.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
I was going to help you out and plug your phone in.
A little window into what our recording is like. it's incredible. Everything you guys said was right.
Imagine that.
How deep into it are you? Tell me what you've
done so far.
Oh,
I went pretty deep. You guys know I am sans employment right
now. Oh, right, right. Perfect time to be playing the game.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have all the, like, I did all, because for people who haven't played it, they give you this big, big map, and you kind of get to tackle things the way you want.
Yeah.
And I got all the big, like map dinosaurs or whatever they are.
The tall necks?
Tall necks. My favorite towers mm-hmm. in video games
oh,
today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loved
oh,
them.
Yes.
And then I...
I just had a breakfast burrito served to me.
All pretenses
yeah,
is off.
Courtesy of Nicole Vespa, friend of the show.
And then I tackled all the cauldrons,
mm-hmm.
which were... some of them... Like,
you did all the cauldrons?
I did all the cauldrons.
That's incredible, man. I only did two of them.
Is that right?
Yeah, because at a certain point I was like, well, I don't need to know how to, like, overtake a thunder maw or a storm bird, because I'm never going to get close enough to them. So I was like, all right, well, I can do some of the bigger predator ones. I can do all the mounts that I need to do. But I didn't need to do, like, the crocodile ones or the weird, like, spitter ones or anything
else. Oh, man,
like that. Yeah.
I love doing that. Mm-hmm. I love getting, like, a thunder jaw in the middle of, like, a bunch of
yeah.
other dinosaurs, because then you just watch them go nuts.
Yeah. So you did it. You did them all.
I did them all.
The most difficult one for me was the one where you're just locked in with a Thunderjaw.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was horrible. Like, I had to... the only way I could do it is, like, I used every single of those, like, line arrows and traps and stuff like that. And then what I didn't realize is... until that fight is you can knock their disc launchers off and then use them.
Oh yeah,
them.
Man.
The which, most satisfying.
Yeah. The most satisfying.
I'm a big fan of the stealth in the game. Mm-hmm. So I just like stealth around and I overtake like a dude.
Yeah.
Or dominate him or whatever it's called.
Whatever. I would call him
reprogram him.
I called it jacking and I realized it's probably not the way it's
I just jacked this Thunderjaw.
Jack this Thunderjaw up.
So that was my strategy for like everything was I would just stealth around until I got caught. And usually try to like reprogram a couple of them.
Yeah.
And in that Thunderjaw fight, it was like so hard to do that because you're just
there's
never
no
you never get a break.
Yeah.
And it's just like arrow. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
The moment I realized that you could use those arrows to blow the armor off, and the Thunderjaw has that like those two hearts on the side of it, it was like all right. Suddenly the Thunderjaw isn't as intimidating because once you get the disc launcher off. It really isn't going to charge at you too much. You know when the front laser is going to be coming at you. There's ways you can actually, once the armor's off, you can control it pretty well. It's just about getting in a place where you can be attacking it. How far are you into the story right now, Tim?
Not that far.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I just wanted to do all that stuff first. What did I do? I found the Lady War Chief that went out on her own.
Yeah.
I did that mission. I'm trying to think what else.
Are you at Meridian yet?
I'm not at Meridian yet.
Wow, you got all the cauldrons and you're not at Meridian yet. That is amazing.
That was why I was like, you did all the cauldrons? Not because it's like, I mean, I did them eventually, but...
Wait, is Meridian the, like, it kind of looks like...
It's like the first big hub, right?
It's the capital city. It's you see the big, tall spire, the, like, kind of...
I may have been there already. Like,
You would know it because there's a bunch of storylines there. It's where all the merchants are. It's where the Hunter's Guild is.
I think I might have gone there but not interacted with anyone.
Oh, okay. Cool,
yeah,
cool.
I think I might have just, like, walked through.
That's where Geralt lives, by the way. Because you'll go there and you will hear Geralt in that place and you're like, where is he? And you run around looking for him. He's not there, but his voice is there.
But that is a great game. And then I've also been hooked on this mobile game I've been playing called... There's two of them. One's called Sabers of Eternity. One's called Guns of Eternity.
Hmm.
And they're like 80 days, like, decision-making kind of games.
Yeah?
Except it's all, like, you're in the middle of a war, and you're a commander of, like, trying to think what the right timeline would be. It's like, okay, so there's magic, but then it's also, like, Revolutionary War era.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Man, military.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So you...
Sabers of Eternity?
Sabers of Eternity, and I think Guns of Eternity.
Interesting.
I'll show you guys on my phone after this. But, it's really cool, and you basically just craft your soldier and your unit after, like, years of choices you have to make, and you kind of have to decide if you want to be, like, a really charismatic general, a really... Like, tactical, intellectual one, or, like, just very good at fighting. Those are your three, like, options.
Right, yeah.
It's really cool. Because there's two different games, you can bring your character from the first one over to the second game.
Nice.
So, yeah. Check that one out.
That's great. Yeah. Cool.
Well, so.
I think we should read the reviews.
Oh, my God. I forgot.
So,
completely
forgot
about this. Yeah, I will need that phone.
Yeah, there you go. folks, for a long time, we asked you, the listener, to get on iTunes and leave us a review. We would often solicit, we would read the review, whether it was good or bad, and then we started giving people prompts.
That's right.
So we're going to read, we've actually had two reviews.
Let's do funny plus smart first.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Go ahead, Tim.
By Nick Wester. I want to be friends with whatever people are making this show. They have enough insightful critiques for games to make a great game review tool and enough left field material to keep things interesting. There you go.
I've never in my life been told that I keep things interesting.
Keep things interesting.
I'm told
from the left
wing. I keep things from happening.
Yes.
Really well done. 5 stars by Nick Wester.
Thank you, Nick.
That's very nice. Thanks, Nick. Then, I'd like to be friends with you too, I bet.
We don't know.
We don't know.
And then there's one by Humpback Whale, which we're pretty sure is our friend Trevor Martin, former guest of the show.
Yeah.
What did Humpback Trevor come on to talk about?
I think Nintendo, we talked sort of at length about
And it has, we asked for a short play at some point,
we asked for a Second City Blackout.
Second City Blackout, that's right.
Oh god,
no. so without further ado,
no.
Clayton, are you able to read this?
No, I
might. Here, we'll read on together.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got parts for all of
exactly.
us. So, and now we present the review by Humpback Whale.
Hey Tim, did you know I just got a new gym membership?
No kidding, that's great, Kellen.
Yeah, I got a personal trainer, too. He says I'm in the most divine shape I've ever been.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, round.
Clayton plays piano like Second City does after a blackout and then talks as Gambit.
My sherry is very good. Wait, do I have extra wine?
No, that's okay. Right now. Yeah.
Kellen! Did you just tell the Westboro Baptist Church that the LGBTQ community uses a rainbow flag to represent themselves?
I may have let it slip out, Tim. Why?
For Pete's sake, Kellen, don't you know what their new chant is now?
Oh no, I think I do.
God hates flags!
Okay. You can read that. Clayton plays piano, like Second City does after a blackout, and then talks as Tiny Carrie Strong. I think it means Carrie Strong, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to thank everyone for your help with all of my dancing and also my gymnastics, but my dancing career is now going to take over.
Oh my god, Kellen! These alt-right conservatives are no joke.
Oh no, Tim, what makes you say that?
They take all sorts of liberals and minorities and make them fight each other for sport.
Oh no, that's terrible!
Yeah, they call it a cockfighting ring.
Clayton plays and then talks as Patreon for 20 minutes. I am Patreon, recurring bit on the show, named after a popular website.
Kellen, let's
I'd
let
like everyone
talking.
To
should
know.
We really do 20 minutes?
What are you guys talking about?
I think,
hey, no,
set my
no one talks
own.
Over Patreon.
Yes, Patreon, yes.
What do you say when I show up?
Hail Patreon.
Oh, hail Patreon.
All hail Patreon.
That's not fair to me.
I mean, that's what Trevor said. We
respect
should want to go
my
have
wishes.
A beer over here. Might as well.
Okay. All right. No, look. Looks like this already turned off. Whoops. Oh, no. Oh, your timer thing turned off. I apologize.
We set it for 20 minutes.
Well, we set a timer for 20 minutes, but it got turned off somehow.
Patreon. There's no
there
time.
There is still more.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, it's me, Normie. Remember me? End of review, 2 stars.
2 stars.
I think Normie was me trying to do a character.
I think he
one,
was,
one
yes.
Yeah.
I think there was definitely a character.
And he was just kind of a normal guy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Trevor. That was incredible.
Thanks, Trevor. Thank you, Humpback Whale.
Oh, so good.
Thank you, Carrie Strug. Your struggle is not forgotten.
Oh, boy. Any other business before we get into our final topic here?
No, fuck no, dude. No, I want to talk about it. Let's
here we
do
go.
It.
Hey, so we have far too many times in this podcast referred to this in America, this obscure Japanese role-playing game.
Probably 3 times would have been too many times.
Oh, yeah.
To bring it up.
Yes. We did a whole episode on it, and then we kept going back to it over and over again.
An episode that is not, you can't find anymore.
No, it was with our friend Nate Sherman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, must have pulled it offline. He's an author now.
Oh. No, but like I think the first, like...
I think we lost some of them because of a space issue or
something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
it's essentially, it's weird.
Oh, no!
Yeah, but a lot of those early ones
are
gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that game is Suikoden 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Now, Kellen, for the longest time,
yes,
we tried to set it up so that you could play this game. It's really hard.
It's very hard. It's interesting because if you go and you Google Suikoden 2, there's all this talk about, like, look, you're a video gamer, you need to play Suikoden 2 because PlayStation Network just put it out. And this was right in the heyday of the PlayStation 3. But if you own a PlayStation 4, there is no way you can play.
Nothing for you.
There's nothing for you. And I don't understand that, but that's a whole nother episode that we'll never do.
Yeah.
And so, it was like, oh, well, let's just give, we'll give Kellen Clayton's PlayStation 3 and he can play Suikoden 2. But life gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And I eventually had to say, like, guys, I would love to do this, but I just don't, I don't think
this is a 120-hour game.
Yeah.
Like, also, if we'd have given it to him, it would have taken weeks for him to finish
weeks. Yeah. Exactly. Because I imagine I would really enjoy it, and it would be a thing like, hey, I don't want to talk about this until I get to the end.
Yeah.
And in my own research and listening and reading and doing all this other stuff, I know I would have been like, this would have been the most incredible game for me to play.
Yeah.
So I am here as the person who hasn't played, but I have some questions for you guys about the game.
Of course.
About your experience with the game and why this game to you like is such a warm spot in both of your lives.
Should we talk origin story, Clayton? How'd you come across this game?
So I was in, I believe, middle school. Middle school? Yeah, it sounds about right. With my friend Jim Funk, great guy. I think he's listening to the show, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Jim and I were good buddies, and one thing we connected on was video games, specifically JRPGs.
Yes.
We were both big like Final Fantasy fans, and he was like, have you played Suikoden 2? And this is like an original PlayStation game, and PlayStation 2, I don't think, had come out at this point.
Wait, was it PlayStation 1 or
PlayStation
2?
It was PlayStation 1. Because Suikoden 2 came out before Final Fantasy 8.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, yeah, that makes sense because that was... I think I played it after I played 8 and maybe even after I played 9. Was 9 on the original PlayStation?
It was.
Yeah. It was, yeah. Jim was like, you've got to play this game. And my mom picked up a copy for me at the, like... electronics boutique, and apparently got remarks from the guys working there like, you're buying Suikoden 2 for your son? Are you the coolest mom ever?
That's amazing.
Like, because they were all like, yeah. We know this game, but nobody knows this game. I got probably one of the very few copies
in the
US.
I was gonna say, it was rare.
I still
very
have it.
Rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And I treasure it. I adore that game. And, I played it, and I had, like, a PlayStation magazine that, like, told you how to get all the characters, but I didn't know anything about the story. And the story really grabbed me, and I was, like, totally devoted to it. I couldn't believe how many, like, branching pathways there were and stuff like that. And, yeah, I just, like, played it endlessly. Mm. And I beat it, and I was like, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to play it all again. And I did.
Wow.
Because I was a child, and time was totally meaningless to me at that point. Not like now, where I spend all day playing Zelda.
situation.
And then I was like, this is so fucking good. And he's like, have you played the first one? I'm like, yeah, no, I didn't even... I figured, you know, it's like a lost thing. And he lent me a copy of it. And I played the first one. It was great, but not as good in my mind. But then that unlocked new dialogue and stuff in Suikoden 2. So
really?
I went back and played it again.
That's amazing.
Like, knowing all the characters. And I like they have way more interactions because it's like they know that you know the characters now if you have a save data from the first game. And I was able to get the hero from the first game, which is like the craziest thing in the world. Oh, it's so great.
As for me, I think... me and my friend Chris Tighe would have these video game sleepovers in high school, and he rented Suikoden 2 from Video Update, I believe. And
that's a great name for a video store.
That's great.
And I was playing it, and he was not too into it, but I kind of remember being like, no, I think this might be like the best game.
Yeah. That's a hard weekend. Like I remember
100%.
Yeah, I remember going over to a friend's house and he had Metal Gear and Final Fantasy VII, and I was like, I don't really care about this Metal Gear game. But I was like, let's play Final Fantasy VII. That's more interesting to play. And like we were trying to play it as a group and it was like, no. And then we played Metal Gear. And then Metal Gear was like, oh, this is so much better to play as
a sleepover.
Yeah, for a sleepover.
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I understand there was like, I want to invest that time in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
But for a sleepover weekend, Metal Gear is the game to play.
Yeah.
So then eventually, me and all my dumb high school friends found ourselves over at Rosedale Mall in Minnesota. There was a KB Toys over there. And I think I had like $40, and the game was like $50 or $60 at that point. And I just kept borrowing money from my friends.
Oh,
like I was just going, like, "Hey man, can I get $2? I need this game." And they're like, "Yeah, fine, here." But I scrounged up enough to get the game. Don't know if I ever paid those guys back.
Yeah. Well,
but hey, it was worth it.
That's on them.
Yeah.
That's on them. All right.
Yes. So. That's how we both came to love this game.
Ugh,
should we go over? I guess we should go over what it is. Really.
It is a very interesting style Japanese role playing game because it's not your traditional Japanese role playing game.
No,
it is the amalgamation of all things that a Japanese role-playing game could be.
That's right, baby.
Like, the more I learned about this game, the more it was like, oh, it's like I've not understood this fundamental part of both of your guys' video game aesthetic. And then I saw this game and I was like, oh, there's the final puzzle piece.
Yeah.
There's the thing that kind of sums all the stuff up. There's like weird esoteric things, like there's a cooking match that you can do. There's
the
like,
best part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be the
idea of the sort of like the large warring parties, the dueling where it's the sort of rock, paper, scissors aspect of it. A lot of what this game in terms of how people describe it is like imagine kind of a Fire Emblem meets Pokemon meets Final Fantasy meets... There's all these different influences, and it's like, yeah, but this game does all of those things better than those other games.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The only... The weakest part of that game is the dueling system, because it's, like, it's based on, like, once you memorize someone's taunts, you're unbeatable.
Yeah, and then it's also, like, why are some of them one-on-one battles, and why are some of them duels? Like, there's a weird disconnect there.
Yeah.
Don't really understand.
I loved me some one-on-one battles, though, in that game. Oh, man, those were challenging. Yeah. Because it's a six character party, which should be overkill.
Yeah,
And if you play the game like I did, where you just maxed out a ton of stuff, boy, it was overkill.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, Luca Blight is getting his ass handed to him.
So Clayton, what happens in Suikoden 2?
So Suikoden 2, on the tails of Suikoden 1, is a very similarly styled game, but polished to an extent where it's much, in my opinion, much superior. The beautiful thing about Suikoden 2 is that it takes place, I think, just like a few years after Suikoden 1. And follows a similar plot line in terms of there's a war between these two countries, and there's the, like, militaristic kind of, I guess, like, more medieval Europe society called Highland.
Yes.
And then there is the city-state of Joustin, which is... clearly very Eastern influence.
Yes.
And, like,
it's a very, like, fucked up democracy with corruption. And
But with a lot of the cultural stuff seems to be more Japanese in nature.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because it's like, oh, okay, you start out as a young kid in the Highland youth brigade called the Unicorn Brigade and with your best friend, Joey or Jowey. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I said
J-O-W-Y.
You tell us.
I just
J-O-W-Y. Joey. It makes, you know.
Jowey.
Yeah. I always said Joey. I hope it picked up that whole slide. That was great. Joey is your best friend. You're both from Highland. And in the middle of the night, there's a an attack, supposedly by the city-state, even though you just signed a peace treaty with them. And then it turns out to be a false flag attack where the Highland Army is pretending to be the city-state.
They're killing their own teenage
soldiers. Teenage soldiers, which seems a bridge too far.
Yeah.
To start a war.
Like, I get that. So the villain is Luca Blight, and he's this madman. Kefka level, like... madman.
Yeah, laughing his ass off as he slaughters people and they beg for mercy. And it's like, okay, so pretty black and white, like cut and dry, this guy's the villain. But weirdly, they do a really good, like, nuanced job with him at times, which I really was not expecting. His death scene is, like, strangely tragic and beautiful.
The fireflies.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
The villain dies.
Like, halfway through.
Through the game, And that's when it really takes a big turn.
Yeah. And it seems to me, it's like, you had both described this game to me, and I was like, okay, I can picture what I think this game is, and then you see the sprites in the game.
Yeah.
You see, and this is a Konami game as well.
Yeah, that's right.
On the PlayStation 1, where it's like, no, this should be 3D.
But 3D, as we all know at the time, did not look great.
Did not look very good.
And also played really clunky.
Really clunky. Yeah. But you see, again, you look at, like, Final Fantasy VII now. When it originally came out, you're like, boy, like, my imagination has a stretch so far. But the sprites of the characters, the world, how you interact with everything. Again, just watching videos of screen captures of people playing this game, it's absolutely incredible to see the amount of detail in all of the sprites in the little kind of photos that pop up of when the characters are talking. It'd be so easy for it to be like Valkyria Chronicles, where it's like, well, this is like three people that just change the hair and the eyes or something else like that. Where it's like, there's so much detail that goes into this game.
Oh, yeah. And when you're in battle, the battle sprites are also extremely detailed.
Yeah.
Your main hero also uses tonfa, which are like sort of like nightsticks that you wear on your arms, and like it's the weird. It's just like I've never seen a main character who uses a weapon like this.
Yeah.
It's so different, and it's very defensive and not offensive.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other big points we got to get out there. So you on the way out of this false flag attack, you and Joey escape, and you both
Joey escape.
And you come to this waterfall and a rock where, this is my favorite part in the game, you both are like, we're going to jump into this waterfall to escape, and we're going to make a mark on this rock. You make yours, you make, I'll make mine. And then if anything happens to us, we'll meet up here at this rock.
Yeah.
And then you jump into the waterfall. That's when like the title screen starts.
It plays a beautiful video about you and Joey going through cadet training, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no dialogue, just video over this beautiful, haunting piano music. And it's extremely well done. Yeah. And it's like also sepia tone or sepia tone for some reason. So it's like, oh, this is really cool.
To show the times. This happened in the past.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, oh, can you, times were so good back when you joined the Unicorn Brigade before everyone got murdered.
Yeah.
And then you wash up on a shore. You're found by a mercenary named Victor, character from the first game, and his partner in crime, Flick, also a character from the first game. Maybe the best video game characters of all time, these two. They're hilarious. They're just the hilarious odd couple where Victor's like, rough and brash and kind of hard to get along with, but
Flick
also
is like handsome and charismatic and
it has like a certain like charm and also refinement to it.
Yeah.
Like wears a blue cape, like looks really dashing, whereas Victor looks like a bear that has like been stuffed in the clothing. And has a je ne sais quoi, as I once read it, and I thought that was very accurate. It's incredible how quickly these guys, these mercenaries who work for the city state of Joustin, introduce you to like a bunch of characters, this whole world, and you realize like, oh, the city state are actually, they seem like kind of good people, and Highland so far can fuck right off. And then you escape with Joey shows up, turns out he was saved by some villagers and survived and came to find you. He helps you escape. You go back to your hometown only to find out that you've been blamed for the murder of the Unicorn Brigade. So now you're enemies of Highland. You have to flee again, this time with Victor and Flick's help. And another great scene where it shows you about to get hung as traitors, pans to a sunset as your old captain, who is also a dickhead, it's talking about like, oh, life will change for me after this. I'm going to get promotions. I'm going to have so much money.
Yeah.
And then he's like, huh? And it cuts back. And Victor is standing amid all these dead bodies because he just murdered everyone. And he's like, hello. And it's like, what the fuck? It's awesome.
That's awesome.
And then you go to war against Highland and you try to help the city state. But Joey betrays
who's
the city
state. We didn't know he's like a Machiavellian war genius.
Turns out. Well, he gets help from a tactician who was also in the first game, Leon Silverberg.
And they also both get these runes, these true runes.
Oh, yes.
One
very
shield
important.
And one sword. And the true runes, we won't go into it, like, this is their magic system.
And this is also
this makes them like each game. Yeah, this makes them like the chosen ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what sets them apart from your average person and why so many people are like drawn to work with them and fight for them and stuff like that. But yeah, Joey winds up going over to the other side. Highland serves Luca Blight. Murders the Annabelle, the again, spoiler alerts for all of this. Assassinates the mayor of Muse, which is the biggest city state like power. In the middle of the campaign, he just kills her. You find him, you get blamed, kind of, sort of, but then everyone's like, this doesn't make sense, so they just kind of let it go. And you become the leader, the de facto leader of the now broken city state. As it's scrambling to try to stop Highland from invading.
Sure.
And, the man, that fight with Luca Blight, I almost want to skip straight to that because that's really the best.
So, I mean, the thrust of it is you and Joey each represent an army. You're leading the city-state. Joey's leading Highland, and that's kind of the game. Maybe we should go to Kellen. Kellen, what questions do you have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, so you both have played a lot of different games since this.
Yes.
Why does this game, mechanically, story-wise, art-wise, why does this game still come back to the surface as, not from a nostalgia point of view, because I don't hear you guys talking about, like, oh, I just remember this game was really great, but these systems don't work, and boy, this kind of sucked. You're like, no, I could still play this game today, and
I would boot it up at this moment.
I think I would push back a little bit on, I bet there is some nostalgia in there. Like,
yeah. Sure.
I think that's unavoidable. But I agree, it's not like starting up a Final Fantasy and being like, oh, I had just nostalgia here and I don't actually want to play this game.
Yeah, the dialogue is a little bit weird, to say the least.
But that's a translation issue.
I have to like just sort of shrug my shoulders and be like, well, you know, like it happens. What else are you going to do?
I think for me, it is because it's 90% of it, it's a wonderfully paced game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a huge deal. Like, you really feel like, you know, as opposed to a Final Fantasy or another kind of JRPG where you're just three characters in a party and you're saving the world or whatever, you're really like, for half of this game, you are in the losing army.
Yeah.
And it feels like you're in the losing army.
Yeah, you're constantly on the run for the first, I mean, maybe 6 hours of the game almost.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's, I think, one thing I feel like we maybe barely touched on was, like, it gives a solid argument for authoritarianism allows you to get things done so much better than democracy.
It draws a lot of stuff from Sun Tzu's The Art of War, actual like stories and anecdotes that he would give in that book are in Suikoden.
Well, this is also historically based on an old Chinese story, right? Like,
Is it Watermark?
I'm not sure, but like, there is historical origins of what had happened to this. The characters are obviously fictional, but like, the historical, what happened with these two rival states, this was based on the Chinese, I don't want to say proverb, because that makes it seem like it's not real, but...
Yeah. You
know. Yeah.
Historical, possible fable.
Based on a true story.
Yeah. But that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense because it does feel like the world is really well fleshed out in all of these games. one reason why is because they're all contiguous. They all more or less pick up where the last one left off, which is why it's so amazing when you're like, you hear references to stuff from the first game, and then you go to the setting of the first game and basically try to enlist their help in fighting Highland, and you're like, these are all characters. Almost every person you meet is a character from the first game, and you can go around the capital city, which was a big hub in the first game, and you're just like, I can't believe this. It should be fan service, but instead it's like this fun, wonderful Easter egg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a question I really wanted to kind of give some room for you is, like, why is Suikoden 2 a obscure game to most people? And why hasn't the ideas that Suikoden 2, like, that make it so interesting, the fact that it's got all these different styles in it. Mm-hmm. Like, why didn't that take off? Like, why aren't more people talking about it? Why, like, what was the causation to not make Suikoden 2 the game that everybody talks about, that you have to try and convince someone to try?
Well, the honest answer is it didn't sell very well. It was a hard-to-pronounce title. It had, the franchise was not well-known over here. They didn't. I don't even think they promoted it well because they didn't print many.
I can still remember the like Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII commercials. And it did. It did well in Japan, but just not over here.
And that's why I think it suffers a lot from being considered a more obscure game in the U.S. And also, it just didn't influence a lot of games in the West because people didn't play it. And if they did, they were like, "Oh shit, this is awesome." But it takes a lot of budget to create a game like that, and I don't think they really got the payout they were looking for. And then Suikoden 3...
Yeah, we should talk about this. So the rest of the franchise, there are ups and downs, but it never reached the same heights of the second one. There's five... Oh, no, that's not true. There's seven games in total. Are there seven?
Wow.
Including the spinoffs.
Oh, yeah.
But let's go with numerical. One, good game. Two, great. We love it.
Phenomenal.
Three, good game again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four, awful. Truly awful.
Four is one of the worst games I've ever played.
Really?
And I played it all the way through.
What about it? Is it the stories? The
writing is a huge problem.
The writing is a huge problem. The mechanics are super clunky. Even the animations, like... A character will hit someone else, and it just looks like, that was it? What was that?
Yeah.
It's like they're hitting each other with, like, padded sticks. You're just like, this feels... There's no weight to this.
Is that just
there's
a budget thing, you think? Or, like, was this... Was it just like, well, this is not...
I think that one got rushed.
It felt uninspired, yeah. It just...
Like, 3 was a pretty good hit.
Yeah, includes like, really cool things where, like, you get to basically choose which of your three characters, because you... That's the huge thing about 3, just to quickly hit on this. You choose how you experience the game. You have three different paths, and you choose, like, act one of this character, act one of this character. If you want to do, like, act one, two, and three of this character first, and then move over to another character, you can do that. You can also choose, like, who the chosen one is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
At a certain point. Yeah. Really cool mechanics in that sense. 4, it was this, like, they really focused on naval combat of all things.
Yeah, they were like, we're going to do, like, this island adventure.
Yeah.
And it's so bland and generic and boring.
5, I never played, but I hear it's great.
5, I played a lot of.
Uh-huh.
And I really, man, I was like, I really want this to be amazing.
Yeah.
And I think it was good.
Yeah, okay.
It had some stuff in it that I was like, oh, that's... fucking sweet. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, it's a prequel, so you see some characters later games.
Okay.
George Prime shows up.
Is he like immortal or something?
No, it's just like he's just old in Suikoden and Suikoden 2, and in Suikoden 5 he's like in his 20s or something like that. It's also one of the most clunkily done, like, character designs and models. So there's a lot of stuff where you're just kind of like, this person looks insane.
Okay.
This is wearing this enormous headdress. Why would you do this? Yeah. This looks nuts.
And then you have Suikoden Tactics, which is a tactics game based off the Suikoden 4 game. Then you have Suikoden Tier Crease.
That's it.
Suikoden Tier Crease, which was a why am I blanking on it? Nintendo handheld dual screen.
DS?
DS. It's a DS game. Reviewed well, from what I understand, but it's not like it doesn't have the duels and the strategy system, so it feels like not a complete Suikoden.
Stuff stripped out of it.
Yeah,
From a budget standpoint, well, we're making a handheld game, so we're not going to put everything in there. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, it was also like a lot of people have kind of abandoned the series. Tactics sold pretty badly.
So I think another reason why it's not as remembered is because the franchise really drops off.
Like,
you know, we remember Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 4 so much because, like, well, this is a bad example because those drop off as well.
But they did kick off a
but
franchise
they do
that's
very
like a,
well.
A household name.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the thing about Suikoden 2 was, like, I know nothing about the production team or, like, what they were inspired by or their ideas for it or anything like that, because it was just like, it just popped out. It was just there. And he was like, whoa, what is this? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, I had done a little research, especially when I found out that Konami had done it. And it was like one of those things where I think Konami had, kind of like how Sony has like a couple different, like, no, not Sony. Kind of like how Rockstar has like different regional teams making different games.
Mm-hmm.
I think Konami had that where it's like, great, we're going to have Metal Gear and we're going to have Suikoden. And those are still under the Konami umbrella. But we're going to put money into what we think is going to do better.
Right.
Which was Metal Gear.
Which was Metal Gear. You
know. And, I mean, they were right.
Yeah.
Wider appeal.
Yes.
But fun fact, if you had a Suikoden save file on your memory card and you fought Psycho Mantis in Metal Gear Solid, he would go, "Oh, you play Suikoden, huh?"
Best moment of my young life.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Like, hearing this guy pronounce Suikoden, it's like, that's how you say it?
Oh.
So I've been saying Suikoden.
Yeah, let's talk about the name, though. Because I watched a bunch of different people, and I've obviously heard you guys say Suikoden enough, where I'm like, no, it's Suikoden. But I heard people say Sudoken, Suideken, all these different pronunciations. Is that another factor?
Where it's 100%.
Yeah.
I met Nate Sherman as an adult, and we had both played Suikoden as kids. And he was like, oh, you played Suikoden? And I was like, is that how you say it? Like, that was the first thing we both were just like...
I said Suikoden until somebody condescendingly was like, you mean Suikoden?
And
I
was that like, me?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a reason why it was not so popular. Yeah. If they'd have called it...
Legends of Cold Steel, Trails in the Sky.
Oh, that, now that's a name.
Because it's interesting because I've heard you talk about that game enough, and then I read and I learn about Suikoden, and I'm like, oh, I can see why
that game
influenced Clayton. I can see why the games we've talked about and the games we've played have been influenced based on your affinity for Suikoden.
Yeah, I mean... Also, just stuff in general that I really like is, you know, character development and specifically, like, unique characters and having them having points of view and, like, things to say and stuff like that. And Suikoden has every Suikoden game has 108 characters that you can recruit into your army. Not all of whom fight. Some of them are like, I build the elevator.
Some of them
like,
run the inn.
Some of them are just part of a music trio that you see one concert of and you're like, I guess that was worth it.
Some of them are kids who should not be in your army.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Including you. The main character is like 15, 16.
Guys, Lason von Terrible, right? There's going to be kids in the army. Come on.
But I couldn't believe when I was like thinking about Suikoden 2 again, I was like, man, every character I can think of from that game has something going on.
Yeah.
Even if it's just like Pezmerga says like three or five words in the whole game because he's a terrifying like demon knight and no one knows where he's come from and he's immortal and he's his whole existence is based around this other demon knight who escaped him one time. He's tracking him until time immemorial.
Wow.
They'll circle each other for all time and never actually be able to face each other because every time Uber feels Pezmerga get close, he jumps forward in time or he like jumps to another plane of existence. It's like so crazy.
Wow.
And he
that
joins
could be a game right there.
Right, exactly.
Buddy, you didn't even know. Let's even talk about the two people with guns in the game.
Oh God, I forgot about this. Clive is
nuts. Like
yeah.
there's a character, Clive or Clyde, where you
I think Clive,
he has a gun and he's like, I like his rune allows him to use his gun, or I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
He comes from this group of people who they're like the first people to use guns, or maybe they're protecting this technology. We don't know.
Okay.
But
they have like their magic based guns.
Sure.
So he's hunting this woman who's stole and is like running away with one of the sacred guns. And
two pistols.
Yes. And
he has a shotgun.
Interesting.
He's tracking him down, and his whole journey in this game. You got to focus the entire game on him if you want to see his story played out.
Uh-huh.
Because it needs to be done within like 30 hours or something like that.
Which is nuts.
And the game times you.
Really?
In order to, like, you need to hit this moment. And it's, I never did it because it's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could have done it with like a Game Shark or something like
that. Oh, yeah. But... No, there's an exploit you can do early in the game. Which was just a glitch that they left in there where you can get to a way later game area in the first couple hours. And if you do that and survive one fight, you jump up like 30 levels.
Wow.
It's like insane.
Wow.
And you know, like there's a bunch of people online like talking about it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. And so
that's
I got to see his end game content. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's just like nobody saw it because it was way too high a bar to set for your players to meet, you know? Even just like the best ending you can get in the game, you have to get all 108 characters.
Yeah.
There's no... if you don't do that, you can't beat the game in the way it's intended.
Well,
to.
I mean... Because
like, what?
The first time...
My mind and my jaw... I'm just like, I can't imagine that happening today, and yet that sounds so incredibly... rewarding.
Oh man, when I got to, because if you miss it, like, you know, you show up to the place and it's like, oh, I've lost your trail, that's it. You cannot he will never be able to pick it back up. And you don't have to do that to get the best ending, but if you want to see his content, you have to get it right. And man, oh man, when I got there and she was there and it was like, oh, I'm going to see this. They have a duel and you watch it and it's just like a cutscene, but it's, you know, all in-game sprites and stuff like that. I could not believe it. I was like, this is it. I finally fucking did it.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
It's like my fifth playthrough of the game. yeah, they do. Have you watched it online?
I have watched it online, yeah.
It's worth watching.
I'm going to have to go and watch it when we get done.
Even if you don't know anything else about, like, the game, you could watch that, like, their shit, and it's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
It's like a Western kind of, you know, tracking this guy who... Oh, and she killed his partner.
That's right.
Yeah, that's why it's personal for him.
I'm trying to think what other big things we should cover.
The six-party team is something I've never seen before.
Oh, and it's...
the Unite attacks.
Yeah, I was just going to talk... Tim... Well,
it's Kismet, it's like you guys have been doing a podcast for a couple years now. Yeah.
So the idea behind the Unite attacks is that each character has someone else in the game they can pair with, and some characters can do a triple Unite attack.
Oh, wow.
Which are by far the most powerful attacks, and almost like breaks the party because it's like, well, I have to get these three guys.
Yeah.
And like some of them are a little more meaningful, like a brother or sister attack. Like you've trained, you know how to do this, or best, like I think there's one called best friend attack with you and Joey.
Yeah.
And then, but then there's like fun ones, like there's one with just three bald guys that you can pair together. And they, through the shine off their heads, like, blind the enemy.
Yeah, that's right. My favorite one was always Flick, who's, like, a master swordsman.
Yeah.
That's, like, a well-known thing. And these two knights. So there's also a knight dump in this game, which is part of the city-state alliance, but is, like, the easily the hardest one to, like, wrangle because their leader is a dickbag. And so you're like, okay, we gotta, like... You convince a couple of his top knights, the Red Knight and the Blue Knight, sort of like it's medieval times or some shit. The restaurant in Schaumburg, check it out.
Yeah.
But they do a swordsman attack with Flick, and it was like the two of them like hit a guy, and then Flick just like holds up the sword in front of his face and like makes one swipe and just like obliterates this dude. And it's like, this is the coolest. Or you're like a teenage kid. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, oh, it's so good.
I would not be doing this episode justice unless we briefly touched on the cooking
competition. We have to talk about the cooking competition.
And then like, so you build this base and it's full of mini games. Like you can go fishing, you can go rock climbing. You can build an artistic, like, statue in the middle of your castle.
Yep.
It gives you, like, bonuses or something like that.
You can get hammers for your blacksmith so that you can upgrade your weapons to the top.
You can play whack-a-mole. Remember that?
Yes, there's a whack-a-mole game in
there's
the garden.
A whack-a-mole. But...
You can also bring seeds to the gardener so he can give you more ingredients.
Yeah.
And then you use those ingredients in the cooking game.
But then you... at one point, you are exploring your castle and you come across this... like patio place, because you inherit this, like, not inherit, you take over this old rundown castle and
from a vampire.
Yes, from a vampire.
Who else would have a castle?
You're rehabbing it. This chef like bursts in and is like, I could turn this into a great restaurant. Part of you wants to go like, that's not really how armies work. We don't need a restaurant. We need
like a high end
large quantities
restaurant
of food. But okay, start a restaurant.
Yeah.
And you can determine the menu, and then he'll give you. That better the menu is, the more money you make from the restaurant.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But and I know we've talked about this before because Star Ocean also had a cooking contest.
Yes,
on the PlayStation. This must have been at the height of Iron Chef.
Absolutely,
in Japan.
Yes.
So after at a certain point in the game, these chefs just start showing up very serious.
Yeah,
like to challenge him, and they bet recipes. And, like, I would have whole save files to just do these cooking contests. And you are.
Because if you
the,
lost one, they stop.
Yeah.
You are the
sous chef. Well,
that's
the way Iron Chef works.
Yeah.
That makes sense. They're gonna do an Iron Chef
doesn't
game. That's the way it has to be.
I think my favorite part of the chef competitions is when you're in, you know, Kitchen Stadium or whatever, in this castle, the room you have never been in.
Yeah.
But one part of this castle, I guess, is just a kitchen stadium. You go in there.
Should not be happening in a war.
No.
Yeah, you're in a war. Also, like, you know, like you're trying to stop like a horrible like monster rune from being unleashed that could destroy the world. But you know, like there's cooking competitions to be done.
People gotta eat, and people want to be entertained.
And this, there's a host, an MC or whatever, who comes out and does the announcing, and he introduces himself as if anyone, like, we the player are gonna be like, oh, you know, they got this guy.
Yeah, spotlights come down on him and stuff. It's incredible. It's incredible.
I just love
it. And that, you never see that guy again. That's all he does.
That's not a party member. If that guy was a guy you could take in a battle, that would be amazing.
I think you can. Can you take the chef? You can't.
No. Oh, yeah. No, actually, you can take the chef in a battle. He doesn't do the army battles, though.
That's true. No. But he fights with, like, a big fork.
Yes.
And I never used him because he's terrible.
No, he's not good.
But he's a great chef, as evidenced by my winning that competition multiple times.
Yeah.
And you had to, like, play to the judges', like, tastes and stuff. It was just really like an interesting.
Iron chef. Again, this is a classic Iron Chef.
Yeah, and even like
not very good scores.
No, no, no.
When you get to the end of his like chef battles, you do the final one. It like credits roll on like him looking off into the sunset and stuff, and it's the most beautiful like melodramatic scene. But it's also like, what the fuck am I playing?
Yeah, this is just a game within this game.
Yeah,
yeah.
My favorite part of the game is the worst part of the game, which is the Green Hill. Section.
Green Hill is in Sonic the Hedgehog?
It sounds like that, but Green Hill is the name of a town.
Okay. It's a college town.
Town.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of kids drinking underage and some of the guys. And probably a town council that is fucking driven nuts by this kind of behavior. But yeah, you have to go there and you have to pose as students. So one, you can only take young characters, and the youngest characters in this game are the most annoying.
Yeah.
And at times, insufferable. And so you're like, okay, I guess I'll take the youngest ones, and they all suck, and you're like, alright, fine. So you're trapped with this group of people in this college dorm, and a lot of it, you also bring Flick, which normally would be awesome, except Flick is barely in this part, and when he is, he's usually getting chased around by a young girl who's like, got a huge crush on him named Nina, who it turns out has one of the best stat pools in the game.
You also shouldn't involve her in your army.
No.
You just gotta let that go at a certain point.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, there's this whole misdirection of like, oh, there's a ghost. You meet this guy, Shin, who again seems like, oh, this guy's gonna be fucking awesome. And then he joins your group and it's like, oh, this guy kind of sucks. do you ever use Shin?
No, I never did. He seemed too, I don't know, basic.
Yeah, he has like nothing going for him. Except for he has a cool sword that he calls like Tarantula that has a big spider for a hilt. A lot of the problem with this game would be like you meet a character that like is really well designed and you're like, oh, this guy seems fucking awesome. I'm going to put him in a party right away. And you put him in and it's like, oh, that sucked. And then you'll meet like a gal like Nina who's like, ugh, what? She hits people with books? This blows. And then it turns out she has like the best mage stat pool ever. And you're like, are you kidding me? There's a master mage I have and he's not as good as this girl. So frustrating.
I mean, we could talk about this game for 3 hours.
Yeah. And it's the last episode, so maybe we will.
Kellen, any other questions you have?
Is there a moment in the game that if you had to, if this could be the only sort of video game experience you could have for the rest of your life? Like I was imagining this moment where it was like, if you were having a moment like in The Notebook, where you're like, well, I don't remember anything, but like your significant other wrote down this moment, and this was like a sweet moment in Suikoden 2, what do you think that moment would be?
Luke of Light, the boss.
Oh, that's great.
And his death sequence, so you... to beat Luca Blight, because he's also like otherworldly strong, which is never really explained.
Okay.
Which I actually really like. You lure him into a trap. He gets hit with multiple arrows. All of his men get killed with arrows. His horse dies with arrows shot out from underneath him. And he stands up, like arrows sticking out of his body and his armor, and is like, let's do this. And you fight him with three different groups. The first group inevitably gets their asses kicked, but hurt him enough that you can keep fighting. The second group, if you get enough of a damage, he'll like run away, and then you pursue him with the third group, and then you fight a duel with him. But not before he gets lit up with a fucking a million arrows because he gets lured into my favorite trap of all time, where he sees a pendant, a wooden pendant hanging from a tree. He's just running for his life at this point. And he sees this thing, and he's like, what the hell? And it's, like, glowing, and he opens it up, and all these fireflies
fly out. I felt so bad for him in that moment.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah, because he's just, like, a dumb, curious guy, and he's like, what the hell? And he opens the box, and, like, all these fireflies fly, and he's like, what the fuck? And then Shu, your tactician, is like, aim for the fireflies, and all these arrows come in.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, on death's door, and he still almost kills you.
I feel like that's a reference to Akira Kurosawa's Throne of Blood, because that's how Throne of Blood ends.
Oh, really?
It's his version of Macbeth, and it's Macbeth in the castle when everyone is coming for him, and it's all these arrows coming at him. He's constantly fighting off the arrows and fighting people off. It's a really beautiful scene.
I can imagine.
I'll lend you the Blu-ray. It's incredible. But it sounds very similar to see that sort of influence of a guy who will not die because of something else propelling him through.
Yeah. And his last words are hauntingly disturbing as he says, I've chopped hundreds, thousands of necks, and it took all of you to kill me, and you'll never undo what I did. And then he goes, ah, all the pain is gone. The fire, everything. I don't feel it anymore. And he falls down dead. And it's like, what the fuck? And this is like a character that by all means should have just been like pure black, no room for gray or, you know, anything like that. But there's a ton of like weird backstory that's hinted at that, like, him and his dad have this fucked up relationship. Him and his sister, like, he like loves and hates her in a weird way. And like his mother, something awful happened to his mother when he was a kid, and he blames the world for it. It's just incredible, and it's not explained to the point that you're like, oh, I see. Like, it's got to be this because, you know, everyone has one thing in their life that they remember forever.
Yeah.
That's not exactly how it is. And I was just like really impressed by the restraint they showed with, like, you know what? We're not going to like over explain this guy, but we're also not going to just like say, you know, oh, he's evil. You just have to kill him because he's evil. It's like, dude, something fucked up with this guy's brain. And it makes so much sense how he dies.
And he's a child,
I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, he's a guy. He's not a god. It's not exactly. Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's the thing that seems so interesting about this is not the world is ending. This is not time and humanity is ending. This is just a battle, a war between these two people, and here's this guy.
Yeah, and my favorite, I keep saying my favorite thing, one of the things about the game is, like, the enemy is not Highland, it's not Luca Blight, it's not Joey, it's, like, war.
Yeah.
You're just trying to end it, and you're trying to end it with, like, minimal loss of life, and then it just keeps escalating and escalating until you're fighting your best friend, and it's like, are we just going to have to murder each other? Is it just these two places can't exist in the same world? Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that's really effective.
I'll get to my favorite moment in a second. Clayton, what do you think of when people say it's like Game of Thrones? Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Yes.
It's not as dark, but...
Yeah, there's...
obviously.
There's almost no, like, sexual violence. So in that way, it's completely different.
But in the sense that you are in charge of this broken democracy, and you're trying to get people to be on the same page, but everyone is looking out for themselves, I totally get that comparison.
Yes. Oh, that completely makes sense to me. And the political stuff is, like, pretty well constructed.
Yep.
It could be way simpler. And I'm like, all right, I like that they actually tried to make it so it feels like these governments are run by people and not by, you know, I'm just like the perfect person. It's like nobody feels like that in that game.
My favorite moment that I would, you know, if I just had that one scene from a video game, it would be the true ending that we've talked about.
Oh,
so you get 108 characters and that unlocks this final, like, canonical ending, I think we're supposed to believe, in which, and you might not even know it's possible, when we recorded about this with Nate Sherman, he did not know this ending.
Wow.
Yeah, because he...
such a bummer.
But it was funny because he was like, I played it and I beat it the way that I felt like it should go.
Yeah, because at the end, if you don't, even if you do get the 108 characters, your advisors come to you and say, look, we won this war, but we have a nation to build, and we'd like you to build that nation.
Yeah.
And you can say yes, and that's a fine ending. You know, like, it's you see him working and creating this world. But then I think at the end of that one, you see Joey at the marked rock. Sitting
there waiting for you. Yeah.
So instead, if you reload it, you say you turn down the sort of leadership. Victor and Flick stop you and they're like, are you sure about this? Because we need you.
Flick almost forces you to stay. And Victor has to be like, I don't think we can do this. I mean, if it's his choice, it has to be his choice.
And then you could just, almost like post-game content, you could just keep playing the game fighting monsters, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But you can go to this pass where you marked the rock, and Joey's there, and he's like, we need to end this once and for all. I'm the leader of the other nation. You need to kill me. And you again
at this point, he's lost everything.
Yeah. You can do that, and then you can acquire his rune, and then you get the rune of creation. Or you can just defend, because it's in one of those duels.
Yeah.
And just let him attack you again and again and again. And when that happens, eventually... We didn't even talk about Lecknot.
Oh, yeah. there's like, another worldly...
The Deus Ex Machina shows
sure,
up.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah.
Cures Joey of this, like, draining force that's killing him.
Yeah, because, like, he's used so much of the Black Sword Rune's power that it's, like, murdering him.
Sure, sure, sure.
That's why he wanted you to kill him. Just, like, make it quick.
Yeah. And then you're sort of given the chance to just be kids again. Not in terms of, like, you know, becoming younger or anything like that.
Not like
just
Chronicles
like,
of Narnia. No. Like, start your life over. It's like, what a horrible thing to ask of someone.
But you are cured of this sort of... Joey's cured of this sickness. And then who shows up? It was the doctor, right? And he's like, I lied to you. I need to tell you something.
Oh, because your sister...
At this point, you think your sister's dead.
Okay.
But it's this fucking awful ruse she made.
That she... Yeah, she orchestrated a ruse because she was like, I'm worried you're too concerned for my life, so I'm going to pretend to be dead until the war is over. Which has got to be like... what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck did you do?
Yeah. Hard to forgive that. But
man, when I thought she was dead, and I, as a player, I was broken up, and I was like, there's gotta be a way to, like, undo this, and there's not. And I'm like, oh man, this sucks.
But then it turns out she's alive, and you, Joey, and Nainami, your sister, just go off on these adventures, and you're just like kids again.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful, because he's choosing, friendship and, you know, family over ultimate power.
That's great.
Yeah.
And also, it's that thing of, like, so often in games, they sort of gloss over this thing of, like, you know, why do you have all this responsibility? Why does it fall to you? And in that game, they do a great job of just sort of, like, saying, hey, it is tough. And at one point, you do have the option to run away.
Yeah.
With Nanami and try to, like, start a new life. And, of course, you know, things go sideways immediately and you have to go back. I only played that through one time because I was like, this is
I could
awful.
Never do it.
Yeah. It just, it feels so wrong to, like, abandon all these people. But you can do it. And it's cool that the game at least pays a little bit of attention. Like, hey, you're just kids being forced to fight, basically, by circumstance. Do you try to just abandon that circumstance? It's like, no. And it's like, all right, cool. Then it's going to keep going. And at the end, that chance to say, like, what do normal people fucking do?
Yeah.
Like,
what do normal people do after war?
Yeah. And they just kind of travel around from what it looks like and see all these cool things and just, like, live, hopefully, happy lives.
Yeah.
They don't show up in Suikoden 3, so. Yeah. Unlike McDowell, one other quick thing. The hero of the first game, McDowell? I don't remember what his first name is.
Yes. I think canonically it's Ryu.
Okay.
I mean, they're always Ryu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, canonically in the second game, it's Hero, H-I-R-O.
Nice.
Don't care for that. Mine was named Clayton. Mm-hmm. And he was, but you know what? He was awesome.
Yeah.
Mine was named Timothy.
Yep.
There you go.
But at one point, if you played the first game and you have a save file, I think you have to have a save file where you get the best ending. Again, 108 characters and all that shit. You can go to this village, and there's a guy fishing there, and it's McDowell. It's the hero from the first game, and you're
like,
great. What? And he just kind of looks at you, and these are silent protagonist games because of the era. He doesn't say a word, and you don't say a word. And it's just like this understanding of, like, man, this is a guy who's, like, gone through the same shit I've gone through. And he also has a true rune. And if you do his little side quest, he joins your army, and you can... It's hard to... He's not one of the 108.
You can use him whenever you visit him.
Yeah, you have to, like, fucking go out of your... Like, and there's no fast travel in this game. So it's just, like, go to the ass end of nowhere to get him for a party. But oh baby, was it worth it, because he was unreal. That's awesome. Easily the best character in the game. He's so powerful. Andy has his room from the first game. Yeah. Andy keeps his level from the first game. So however you built him out the first time, he's back, baby. And he fucking crushes. Andy has a unite attack with a hero. So you know
right.
I love
him. Yeah.
Oh, God. I love that bit.
Play Suikoden in 2, everybody.
Yeah, well,
if you get the chance. I don't know how you can do that.
Yeah, also, bear in mind you now know the entire story.
So.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be on PS4. I know people are pushing for that.
That's what I was going to say. If they did an HD remake of this game...
What does that even look like, though? It's sprites, right?
But, in terms of, it looked like Stardew Valley or something like that.
I could use a retranslation, which apparently they've done.
Yeah.
People have created, mods that you can... But it's very complicated.
Yeah.
I haven't ever been able to get it to work on my computer. Apparently, they do exist. So it's like, do that. And you will... You will not regret it if you have a chance to play this game. Even knowing all the plot lines like we just told you. I still think there's enough in there, and there's tons of stuff.
Look, there's a bathhouse you can go take a bath in. Check
that
out.
Check it out.
There's a city where it's kobolds, humans, and winglies? What are they called? No, winglies Legend of Dragoon.
The bat people.
Yeah, people with big leathery wings, which it's like, why aren't they in charge of everything?
Yeah.
It's like, no, they're the persecuted people. It's like, this seems weird.
Kellen, thank you for indulging us in the last episode here.
Please, the least I could do. And as the last episode, it makes sense that this would be the thing to talk about.
Oh, man.
Thank you for not being offended for when I finally said, I don't think I can play this game.
Yeah. No.
I don't want to not do the episode. I want to be on the episode with you guys.
100%. But. Agree.
Yeah.
It's so good, but it's a big time
commitment.
Guys, who should we thank? We got a lot of people to thank, right?
Hey, thanks to the Nerdlogs for 100%. Even giving us a chance to do this.
Cards Against Humanity.
Absolutely.
For helping us out for a long
time. Almost everyone at Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for every single guest who's come on. Everybody who we coerced and begged to come on. And everybody who said, hey, please let me on. I need to talk about this game.
Absolutely.
Even when we were like, really? You want to talk about this game? We're like, yeah. I want to talk about this game.
Yeah, thank you very much to one specific guest, Nicole Vespa, who has often put up with us talking about these things very loudly, especially me, in her home while she's trying to do other stuff.
We got to thank Eric.
Eric Arnault.
Without Eric, we wouldn't have this. He's been with us the whole journey. So, Eric, thank you for putting up with this, putting out episodes late, not having ads. Having episodes that were like, oh, by the way, there's this technical error in the middle. Can you figure it out? And always, always pulling it off. Eric's the best.
Mm-hmm.
And check out all of Eric's shows. Your Stories. The mixtape. What is the mixtape show called? Fuck.
Oh, it's coming out soon. Check it out.
Out for a while, right? It's Eric's mixtape show.
It's Eric's mixtape show.
Hold on. Let's let you edit in a moment here where you just plug your show.
Yes, please.
It's called Blank Cassette.
That sounds great! Sounds like a great show!
I'm glad that we are not doing that show, so Eric can have more time to do that show.
Eric edits every episode and often gives us great feedback. He's a fantastic guy. Great for a project if you're looking to hire a sound editor for anything. Yeah. Eric is your guy.
Yeah.
Kellen, I want to thank you for filling in for me when I left out on the ocean for 4 months.
Absolutely. I was going to say thank you guys for letting me come on the show. Thank you guys for letting me. I remember when I heard you guys were doing the show and be like, I want to talk about Skyrim, and I still have such fond memories of those early shows. And then when you're like, hey, do you want to come on and just fill in? And then I was like, blown away being able to do that, and then we're like, we want you to stay. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you guys better and doing this show, so thank you both.
Absolutely. And Tim, thanks for originally asking me if I wanted to do this least confident way possible.
Yeah.
So that I felt bad about saying no. It has been a real pleasure. Me and Tim met years ago at an Ann Sather's to talk about this idea of doing a video game podcast.
Yes.
I asked, can we talk about Suikoden 2? And he was like, maybe eventually. it's been a real pleasure, Tim.
Yeah.
And I feel like, the three of us were like friends before this, but now I feel like we're very good friends. Absolutely. I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, thanks for asking me to do Dread at your birthday 2 years in a row.
Yeah, of course.
That was a blast.
Thank you, Clayton.
That was a real pleasure.
No, I mean, you, listen, you're that wild card. You're that spice in the mix, man.
Mm-hmm.
but no, thank you very
breakfast
much.
Breakfast burrito I just ate.
Yeah.
And hey, listeners, thank you so much. Everyone that reviewed the show. I really mean this when I say, like, you let me and my friends here feel like kids for, like, an hour each week.
Yeah.
And that's, that means a lot as we get so old, you guys.
Yeah.
And so I've talked to a lot of people who listen to the show. Not a lot, because not a lot of people listen to the show. But I've talked to people who do listen to the show and really enjoy it. I've talked about how much they have enjoyed it in the past and how much they, like, learned a lot of stuff from it. And I hope that you have... been, you know, given the chance to listen to this, and that you have felt in turn that you can reach out to me at any time. If you know me, or if you know Tim, or if you know Kellen, feel free to reach out and tell us, you know, like, what you thought of the show, how much you enjoyed it or didn't, or whatever. Or, you know, if you have, like, just a burning need to talk about this show with us, we're totally open to that, because we really appreciate you listening every week, and hope that, you know, you have discovered love of games through this, or maybe...
Or musicals.
Yeah.
Or musicals.
Or you musicals. Discovered Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yeah.
Arguably, very arguably, a good musical.
Kellen, I want to do one last apology. I'm sorry that we never got to your best tits in gaming episode.
Well, there's still time left, guys.
There's still time. There's still time. I honestly thought about doing that as, like, I was gonna do a switcheroo.
And we couldn't seriously.
I was gonna be like, no. Yeah, we're gonna talk about the best games we've talked. It's Switch. We're gonna talk about the best tits in gaming. Oh, but I was like, I just don't think. I don't think that joke lands anymore.
No.
I think that was a funny joke at the time, but I don't think that works
the
anymore.
The joke being that we all hate. There are people who actually do that online.
Yeah, there's absolutely.
That
people.
Is a bummer.
Yeah, yeah. I also want to say thank you to anybody and everyone who supported our Extra Life campaigns.
Yes.
Who donated money,
yeah.
Who sat up at night with us as we played games. Again, Cards Against Humanity for letting us host that. Being able to raise a total of over $3,000, almost $4,000 for Lurie Children's Hospital over the past 2 years has been great.
Mm-hmm. Look, exhausting.
Exhausting. Absolutely exhausting.
But great.
And so again, if you donate money or if you support us anyway, thank you again for doing that as well. That's you, the listener, are the hero.
Do we want to do plugs? Do you guys want to do that?
Nah.
I don't think so. Yeah.
If you want to listen to plugs, go back to the penultimate episode.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's great.
Those are probably still the same plugs.
Kellen, thank you.
Thank you.
Clayton, thank you.
Tim,
thank you.
Thank
Tim,
you
I gotta go. So
let's wrap this up. Listeners, thank you so much. And without further ado, Clayton, take us out with your final catchphrase.
TTFN. Ta-ta for now!
Bye, everyone.
This has been a Nerdalogs production. If you'd like to help make more things like this, please visit patreon.com/nerdalogs to donate today, and go to www.nerdalogs.com for more cool stuff. Thanks for being awesome!
Thank you all. I am GrabBot23548X.